Full Service Radio. Hello, and welcome to Insert Here, a sex podcast where lust and learning meet. I'm your host, Kate Warren. Each week, I invite a new guest on the show to share their experiences outside the heteronormative or vanilla worlds of sexual expression. Guests bring a wide variety of gender, orientation, and racial experiences to life through their stories. They approach sexuality in fascinating ways and talk about how it's informed by who they are and what they've experienced. I invite regular people to share their best tools, tips, and tricks for communicating, thinking about, and of course, having great sex. We have exciting news today. I'm thrilled to welcome Nia Abram to the Insert Here team. She'll be working primarily behind the scenes as a producer. So she'll be helping me find and work with our guests, help me stay organized, and provide background research for each of our episodes so we can continue in our mission to provide fun sex education through the lens of personal storytelling. So she's with us on the show today. Nia has a background in gender and environmental studies and specifically focuses on the intersections of race, gender, and queerness. She's a proud eco-feminist and has worked doing sexual assault prevention and education focused on fraternities, where I think we all know
yes,
they can benefit from it. She also ran a theater production to share stories, poems, monologues, and other spoken word pieces on sex, relationships, gender, and race, which she is now working to bring to high schools to foster sex education through the arts. Hell yeah. She is currently studying for her master's degree at American University in social impact communications. I could not be more excited to welcome you to the show today, Nia.
Thank you for having me. I'm genuinely so excited to be here right now. I never thought I would actually be live on a podcast ever in my life. So this is like step one on the journey of self-fulfillment, life goals, glowing up, final form, however you want to put it.
We are out here. So as we do with all of our episodes, do you want to start off by walking us through your labels that you choose to use for gender orientation, if you choose to use them?
Yes, and I'll go through my racial labels as well, because I think that's relevant to how I identify sexually.
Great.
But I think on the whole, I identify as queer, and that is kind of an everyday constant, and then I identify as bisexual depending on my mood or the current political climate. so it may depend how I'm feeling about men that day in particular. But my sexuality, I think, changes so much day by day, so queerness is the best label to kind of like encompass all of the different things I feel. And then I identify as an African-American woman as well. And I think that definitely impacts my interpretation and understanding of sexuality.
Awesome. So to start, can you kind of walk us through how for you queerness is sort of an umbrella term that touches all the different pieces of your identity?
Yeah. So queerness is a word that I wasn't quite familiar with until I got to college, and I had the very stereotypical college awakening, and my parents were concerned, like, she's reading books now, and she's protesting and doing all these college activities. So I kind of discovered queerness as a label that is sort of an antithesis to labels, if that makes sense. It's meant to sort of be an all-encompassing term that allows anyone and everyone who deviates from any type of norm to identify themselves. And when I heard that word, I was genuinely excited to finally feel as though I fit in somewhere by not fitting in somewhere, and having a word to identify not identifying with anything. And so that sort of like oxymoronic nature of the word queerness has definitely informed the way I move through the world, not only as a bisexual person, but as an African-American woman who has typically not fit into the stereotypical gender norms and expectations of mainstream society, just because whiteness so heavily informs the way women in particular are, taught to be and act, behave, who they're supposed to have sex with, how they're supposed to have sex. And I think myself and many other Black women in my life have been really empowered by queerness, because it gives them a space for them to say, oh, wow, like I can be the sexual being that I want to be without having to fit into the labels that whiteness has prescribed. So,
and I think it's so important. That's awesome. And I think it's important to
acknowledge that you're uncoupling the concept of queerness from having sex itself.
Yes, it's a yes, it has a lot to do with who your sexual partner is, but queerness is a political identity. And that's where politics of queerness become really complicated, right? When you start talking about the intersections between someone who's trans versus someone who's gay versus someone who's white and gay versus someone who's Asian, Pacific Islander and trans. Those identities and labels start to get a little bit more muddled, and it does become a lot more about just who you're having sex with, but like how you're able to move through the world based on how you look. And so queerness is definitely, for me, like a way of living more so than who I'm having sex with. And I think that now that I'm saying it, I'm listening to myself, I sound like one of those people who's like, oh, those gays with the lifestyles, oh, that's the lifestyle you want to choose.
Right.
But I do think in a lot of ways it is a mentality of how you move through the world. It doesn't necessarily have to be a choice. Like, you know, there's differences between being born a certain way and choosing to do things. That's a whole separate conversation. But for sure, queerness can be applied almost to things in ways that don't necessarily have to do with who I'm having sex with. For example, like I identify as queer, regardless of whether or not I'm dating a man or a woman, you know? So if I'm with a man, that doesn't mean I'm in a straight relationship with this man. I'm still queer. And the relationship is still queer to me. And so figuring out how to have queer sex within quote unquote heterosexual relationships has been really difficult to kind of navigate.
So how do you have that conversation with men who identify as being heterosexual?
It's been interesting.
Because you're queering them.
Yeah, exactly.
By being with it, because it's a queer relationship to you.
Exactly. So it's been, I've had some negative experiences and some positive experiences.
Okay, tell me the tea.
I know, I'm going to spill it. So I've been in experiences where, because I'm straight passing, and since none of you all can see me, I have a relatively short haircut. And so for a lot of black women, that's relatively common, actually. So it also depends on like who I'm dating. If I'm with a white man, they may interpret my appearance as a little bit more queer than if I'm like with a black man who's used to seeing black women with their hair short and not making any presumptions about that.
Right.
And so in the past, I've actually only exclusively dated white people. And that's because I've grown up in pretty suburban areas. I lived in Orange County, California for a while. I lived in a suburb outside of Atlanta. I lived in like central New Jersey, went to undergrad at NYU, then transferred schools and went to Colorado College. So I've been all around the country, still in predominantly like white liberal spaces. And so a lot of the men that I interacted with definitely saw their sexual experience with me as like a way to try something new.
Oh, no.
And so that coupled with bisexuality, right, is like creates this kind of odd fetishization of like the fact that she's
and
queer.
And you're black.
Yeah. And I'm like, so you're fetishizing that I'm black and you're fetishizing that I'm bisexual. So you're really clearly interested in the fact that I like women.
Right.
But just because you're interested in that does not mean you're acknowledging queerness. You're just fetishizing that I like women.
Right.
So it's been interesting trying to communicate to them that like their participation in the relationship has to be more thoughtful than one that they may have with a straight cis woman who's like on the same page as they are. So that's mostly been difficult, is like trying to move the needle in their mind of like, this goes beyond just me, but like this just impacts your life, right? Like this impacts how you think about sex, how you think about women, how you think about me. So the negative experiences I've had have been like super negative and have resulted in horrible.
Can you share
horrible,
maybe one of those experiences?
Yes.
If you're comfortable?
Yeah. So I had a moment, this was really early on in the relationship that I had with a white man in college. He asked me like, okay, no offense, but like how do lesbians have sex? And I was like, what's going on? Are you really asking me this right now? And so I think the hardest thing about being in a relationship with someone where your identities are in many ways so different is you kind of feel that that microaggressive violence, like in intimate settings, like this, like he asked me this question, like right after we had sex.
Right.
That is
well, but
not
to him. He's asking because he's genuinely
exactly,
curious.
Right. And so
like exhibiting like interest in this other part of your life.
And so that sort of education process was really hard because some people receive feedback of me being like, okay, let's unpack why that question may not be the best for you to ask me right after we had sex and I'm fully naked. I'm vulnerable, you know, and mm-hmm. I don't want to feel aggressed or disrespected by my partner when I'm in a vulnerable state.
Right.
And so the men that I found have been able to be successful in relationships with me have been able to listen and hear feedback.
Sure.
And then actually apply that. Because I think that was the big thing is like, you can say all of you want that you get it and you understand what I said, but if we're not changing the actions within the relationship to reflect what we said,
right.
Then things are not going to change. So that's definitely one of the many negative experiences I've had with men and a lot of pushback. My ex-boyfriend used to get nightmares about me like leaving him for women, so like that insecurity, right, of being feeling as though you can't provide something for your partner because you simply just don't have the same identity as someone they're sexually attracted to. So that was definitely causing rifts in the relationship as well.
Right. Well, and whether if you're in a queer relationship or a straight relationship, if you find yourself in those conversations where there's, you know, jealousy in that way, like being expressed, it can be really hard to come to a place where you're acknowledging like the sensitive place that jealousy is coming from, without being defensive or anything like that.
Yeah.
Right. And so to your partner who was asking, because he was genuinely curious, like he may not have understood that by asking you like, how do lesbians have sex when you're like naked laying there next to him, and why that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like how would you prefer that? And this is obviously just speaking for yourself, and not on behalf of other people. But how would you prefer people who don't have a lot of exposure to you know, queerness or lesbian relationships or things like that, broach those kinds of questions in a way that's respectful?
I think like the intimacy part is like the key component in making sure that that's being done respectfully. Like, and I know folks who go through like body dysphoria and things like that have similar feelings of like, if you're touching my body in a way or with me in a naked and vulnerable way, like that is not the appropriate time and place for us to now start having a conversation like this. So making sure that like you're being intentional about when you're asking those questions, and listening to your partner if they've already said that there are ways for you to like learn about these types of things aside from them. And I think that was the big thing for me in this situation was that it's not like I hadn't already provided an abundance of material and outlets for this person to learn about these things.
Right.
But here's
a video, do the Googling.
Yeah. Like I was like, also we're in college. There's classes you could take, friend. Like, like
it's not your job to do the emotional labor of it.
Yeah. And like there are a whole entire black femmes who fully get paid full time to teach you about this. So go ask them.
Yeah.
And so I think like partially for me, it was, you know, take your own initiative on learning about this stuff. And yes, I can be an entry point into that. But if you're leaning on me and relying on me as a crutch to solely be your main educational resource, then I mean, one, that's just not the full story, right? Like I'm not the only person who experiences these things and I'm not the only person who's queer and black in the world.
Totally.
So one, you know, broaden your depth. But to make sure that you're not emotionally exhausting your partner. And I think that's like the main thing is not that any of those comments are necessarily inherently bad all the time if they're coming from a place of curiosity. But I think and this can be said for a myriad of identities, but like women don't want to be asked about women's issues all the time by their male partners. Queer people don't want to be asked about queer things by straight people all the time.
Right.
Because it does exhaust you when you kind of have to go through that day in and day out, let alone with a partner, you know?
Well, and I think it's the responsibility of each person to own their own wokeness, right? Like you can go and do the Googling, listen to podcasts, like read fiction written by people in that perspective, like go like find a poem, like listen to a song.
There's
like there are
so many
different outlets. And you know, for instance, like I grew up in a predominantly white state. I grew up in Vermont. And you could count the number of people of color in my high school on your hands.
Oh, wow.
My boyfriend now is African.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have, and bless his heart, he minored in gender studies, which makes my life so much easier.
Yes.
And like, I am so grateful every day that he has put in the work, bless him, before me, to educate himself about gender issues and what my experience as a female is like. He owns that knowledge. And so when we got together and I frankly like I was totally willing to acknowledge like gaps in my knowledge about black culture in America, but also African culture specifically. And I went out and like did reading and listened to podcasts and asked him for book recommendations and wanted to totally own my own wokeness.
Yeah.
And now it's interesting because if we are out together and people ask us about being an interracial couple, if they ask questions around race, and we, this is something we sort of like jokingly decided in like a casual way in advance, like questions about race, like I will try and answer first. Mm-hmm. And questions mm-hmm. about gender, from a female perspective, he will try and answer first. So we're like, we're not doing our own labor.
Yeah, that's great. And like kind of tag teaming in and out of that. And that's something that I've found recently has been fun and interesting about, I am now sort of in a pseudo relationship with a man of color for the very first time in my life. First person of color I've ever dated. So it's a personal milestone for me.
Cool.
Just in feeling like heard and seen and respected in the relationship on levels that I haven't been able to before. But like navigating those things of, you know, we have certain levels of understanding and like mutual knowledge about things that regarding Black culture, but we don't necessarily have the same understanding of gender and sexuality. Mm-hmm. So coming to a head on that and like helping people understand the intersections of themselves almost like through the relationship. And so it's clear that he's learning a lot about how like his struggle as a Black man relates in many ways to the things that I go through as a Black woman or as a queer person. And so navigating that has been difficult, but I think fun.
So talk to me about, since you have historically dated white guys,
mm-hmm.
How like the things that are different or like different challenges.
Mm.
And maybe we can, sort of start by approaching this through the lens of sex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I found that the hardest part for me is figuring out my sort of queer desires within whiteness, if that makes sense. So I'm interested in doing things like BDSM play and other sort of quote-unquote queer activities in the bedroom. So pegging is something that I have never done before, but mm-hmm. I'm interested in doing.
Mm-hmm.
But those...
And for those listening, pegging is where a female wears a strap-on and has anal sex with a guy who is male-bodied.
Mm-hmm. And so that's something, I mean, if you ask my friends, I joke all the time that I'm in search of my bottom. So,
oh my God, I love that so much.
So, they are, were probably listening right now and so mad at me because this is probably the billionth time I've brought this up, but it's a power dynamic that I'm really interested in exploring.
Yeah.
But when you bring race into that, it complicates things more, right? Because, and I think there was an article written about this that a Black woman friend of mine actually shared, where she had fears of doing BDSM with white men because it really reiterated the historical power dynamic between white men and Black women,
right?
And brings up a lot of traumatic experiences, either like in her own life or my own life, or just historically speaking.
Right.
So it's been hard trying to make sure that I know that the desires that I have are really rooted in what I want, not necessarily like an internalization of trauma or a craving
to reenact. And that can just
reenact.
Be cultural trauma.
Yeah, exactly. So I kind of dabbled in exploring in like a little bit rougher types of sex with like my white male ex-partners, but never really like delved deeper into that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to see where things could go with a Black partner and see maybe if things would change.
Mm-hmm.
In that regard, because it's been difficult. Even certain things that people like to say and do during sex are really relevant to race. Like I know Black people who have white partners who like to have the N-word said to them during sex. Not a personal preference of mine, but I definitely see how people kind of crave almost the fantasies that we think are quote unquote wrong. I know people talk about rape fantasies mm-hmm. and things like that. And so sort of like consensually doing something that otherwise would be deemed unconsensual, a lot of people like to explore.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something I've ever had a chance to do, I think, because I've exclusively only had white partners.
Right. Did you find that your white partners were acutely aware of these sensitivities, or were these things that you sort of had to...
I had to articulate these things very explicitly to them. There wasn't very much prior understanding about even just gender power dynamics within the relationship, let alone racial ones. So it definitely was another point of causing rifts within relationships where mm-hmm. I would express a concern or need to maybe like be mindful of your language during sex, or like, be mindful of your language around me, period. Right. And was met like,
don't
with,
call me your bitch.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't want to be called your bitch. And I had an ex-partner use the N-word in front of me. And he said that he was just repeating what was said in a song. And I again, it was a situation, right? Like, where you're with your partner frequently, you're in intimate settings. Like, I very vividly remember, like, I had just taken a shower and he was hanging out in my room and I was getting dressed. And I'm in a situation where, like, I'm vulnerable, I'm naked, and I'm not, like, currently in the right state of mind to now have a full discussion about the N-word, right?
Right.
And so I was met with an argument as well, and he was like, oh, well, what else would I say if
neighbor?
Yeah, I'm like,
neighbor is the N-word that white people can use.
I'm an advocate
if
for that.
If the other N-word is in a yes. song.
Neighbor. And I have a, like, one of my lovely dear friends.
I love the Jay-Z song, Neighbors in Paris.
And neighbor has the perfect amount of syllables too, so it
exactly.
works. But my plus my hilarious. Good friend, like, usually turns it into a joke, and she'll just, like, blurt out random, like, sounds and stuff during it. And she does it almost to sort of reemphasize to the other white people in the room, like, this is not a word you should be saying at all. And so I like the way she does it, because it almost calls attention and, like, holds up a mirror to anyone in the room who feels tempted to say it.
Right.
But yeah, that was another situation in which I sexually and intimately felt uncomfortable around my partner because he had said something that was racially insensitive, and I was met with some backlash.
Totally. So how, if we can switch gears a little bit, tell me a little bit about some of your most formative sexual experiences when you were young.
The very first time I masturbated was...
How old are you? Do you remember?
I need to... Let's see. I think I was 12, maybe 11.
Okay.
And I was in my house, and I'd gotten home from school early. And so, you know, it's like 3 p.m. and it's like the lovely Renaissance period of, like, your parents aren't home from work yet. You get to be home alone, and you're, like, middle school age.
So
you're, you're feeling like, ooh, I'm an adult.
Yep.
And I went into the kitchen and grabbed a turkey baster and just went to town. So while I definitely washed it before I put it back, I put it in the dishwasher like twice.
Great.
But I definitely watched my mom use it at Thanksgiving, like that following Thanksgiving, and was really nervous that someone was going to say something.
You're like, this gravy is delicious. I have no further comment.
Yeah, gravy, a little salty. Like, and you're like, no.
Is that umami? What's that?
But yeah, that was a really formative experience for me, just because I was, like, because I was by myself, and because I was, I think, rather young for the age that a lot of, like, people, females who are raised as women, start masturbating, like, I definitely started to gain a sense of awareness of my body earlier. I got my period really young, like, when I was 8 or 9.
Oh, wow.
And so just that, like, having the sex talk and all those things my parents had with me super early on, just because they were like, homegirl's bleeding, we got to get on it. Like, she, like, we need to educate her. So I knew about a lot of those types of things early on. And growing up in predominantly white spaces and areas, that was a difficult process, just because of the way that a lot of young black women in particular are hypersexualized as children. And so there were moments where, like, I'd be walking around at the mall and I was like maybe 13, and my dad would look over and be like, Nia, I just saw like two grown men like fully stare at you and clearly like make a pass at you. And so that was kind of difficult.
Really identifying as a child.
Yeah, and like, I'm wholly a child. I'm like just now figuring out who I am. And so I think getting my period on top of that, and being in a predominantly white school, like, all the white girls that I grew up with were like, oh my God, what's it like? Like, what's it like to be an adult? Da-da-da. And I was like, I'm not a sexual person yet. Please don't sexualize
You're
me.
You're like, I'm 8.
Yeah. and especially in the way that periods are sexualized too. Like, me getting my period does not mean I'm an inherently sexual person yet.
Right.
But I think that periods are like very much viewed as this moment in which girls turn from girl to woman, even when you're not a woman, not even close to being a woman.
The way it's messaged, like, oh, you're a woman now, congratulations.
Like, yeah, and I'm like, this is not a bat mitzvah. Like, this is like, no, this is a bodily process.
Right.
So it's yeah,
it's
it was
really challenging.
it was definitely difficult.
So going forward, how did moving around really sort of in these predominantly white spaces inform the way that you dated?
It was difficult. I grew up in particular white spaces where people were very clearly adamant about the fact that black people only date other black people. So I didn't have opportunities to date because I didn't have a pretty particularly large pool of people to date if right. I was only allowed to date other black people, whatever that means. My high school, when I lived in Orange County, California, didn't like I could also count like the amount of black people in my grade on like both of my hands. So on top of that, they were not interested in me. They were interested in white women. And so that dynamic of not being black enough for black people or white enough for white people to really just honestly end up dating nobody. Because all of the black men that I was interested in were interested in white women and thought I was too difficult. And the white men were like, but black girls don't date white guys, so don't even try. And so that was really difficult trying to figure out like who I even liked because no one liked me back.
It's frustrating.
And it created this weird dynamic where like I didn't even get to necessarily explore queerness because I was so focused on that like heterosexual element of things. I hadn't even got to that stage yet, that to get to a stage beyond that was so hard for me to do. And it created a weird situation, an equation in my mind that I'm realizing now I have to kind of unlearn, which is that like I don't even necessarily view black women as like potential sexual partners because I viewed them so much in sisterhood in those predominantly white spaces that
there aren't that many of us. We got to stick together.
Exactly. And like, and for fear of ruining a friendship or relationship, like I was like, I would rather be friends with this person than try to jeopardize that friendship and like lose a friend and an ally and lose solidarity over that. And so I think coupled with the fact that in the black community, at least in my experience, like things are definitely still pretty heterosexually oriented. Mm-hmm. The only people that I knew that I could imagine myself dating were black men, but I wasn't able to date them and I wasn't able to date white men. So I, for the majority of my high school career, I was single up until like the summer after I graduated. So I wasn't even in high school anymore.
Okay.
And that was like my first real-ish relationship, whatever high school relationships are.
Right. So talk to me more about the idea of not being black enough for black folks and not being white enough for white folks.
Yeah.
And being sort of in this like racial limbo.
Yeah. And this is an experience I think a lot of people call being an Oreo. So kind of black on the outside and white on the inside is an insult that's been hurled at black people who are quote unquote act too white. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a term that I've come to reclaim and others have as well, but it was a really difficult space to reside in because you are kind of always constantly policing yourself. And so you're trying to assimilate to like 8 different things all at once. Like, depending on where I am, I will code switch into certain things. If I'm around black people, I'll try to sound blacker. If I'm around white people, I'll try to sound whiter. And it almost becomes so second nature that I don't realize I'm doing it anymore because it was so essential to my survival and having any sort of social life in high school. So I find myself even now code switching into things that I'm like, that's not me. That doesn't sound like me at all. I would never say that. But it just like pops up like that. It's so second nature that it kind of it almost pollutes who you are, right? Like I spend so much time focusing on how I was supposed to act in certain spaces that I didn't have time to form my own identity. Like I didn't have time to form my own sexual identity or my racial identity because I was just doing the identity that everyone else wanted me to do.
Making other people more comfortable.
Yeah. And yes. And trying to make others feel okay with me being present in the space instead of trying to make sure that I felt okay in a space.
Right. And that you have a right to be in that space.
Yeah. And have a right to exist the way I exist, you know, and not have to tone down or police how I talk or how I act or what I do.
Completely. Well, and that you have just as much right to your own pleasure and to be viewed as a sexual person, if that's what you are looking for from someone that you have a crush on, for instance, as anyone else.
Yeah. And that's definitely not, especially with black women, that's a luxury that many of us are not afforded because we are, I would say in the way we're painted in the media, at least, and the historical, you know, relationship between like whiteness and black women is very strained in that we're often painted as angry, hypersexual, masculine. And so all those traits don't coincide with what we believe to be the correct form of femininity and like something that's sexually desirable within women. Right. Like,
right. Well, it's not nuanced. Like the different versions of black womanhood that are depicted in mainstream media are really still limited, right? Mm-hmm. You have like the mammy figure,
yes,
and you have the angry black woman, and you have like the sassy friend,
mm-hmm.
and outside of that, like we still are very limited in how mainstream culture is portraying black identity, which is how I think for women, mm-hmm. But also for men, which is why I think shows like Insecure or Blackish are doing a good job of sort of expanding the way that you know, people from all over the country are perceiving black mm-hmm. women mm-hmm. as just being people, because that's what they are.
Yes. And obviously, of course, unless you don't desire sex and are asexual, like many of us, the majority of us, no matter who we are, what we look like, crave some sort of human intimacy at least.
Right.
And so to be limited on the basis of race is so absurd to me. Yeah. It lacks a lot of empathy, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. So we're going to take a really quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about coming out.
Yay.
You are listening to Insert Here, a sex podcast where lust and learning me. Welcome back. You are listening to Insert Here, a sex podcast where lust and learning meet. I'm your host, Kate Warren, and today I'm joined by our new producer on the show, Nia Abram. Welcome back, Nia.
Hey, everybody.
So before the show, we spent a lot of time talking about the intersectional that's right, relationship between gender orientation and race, and how mm-hmm. all those things can be political identities, and how they can all sort of inform your relationships and your sexual dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
So now, tell me a little bit about your process of coming out. You identify as queer and bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
What was your coming out process like?
I never came out. And I talked about this a little bit before the break, but I never really had the opportunity almost to come out, if that makes sense, because I wasn't really afforded much opportunity to have sex, period. Mm. And so I got to college and sort of realized, oh, okay, like there's more things out there. And it was a situation where, you know, I wasn't necessarily in a situation where I had a strong affinity to hook up with women, and that's how I knew. It was mostly that I had been presented with only one opportunity, and it was to have sex with men. And then I got to college and was provided with more opportunities to have sex with all types of people. And once I was provided with that opportunity, I realized how much desire I had to explore that. And I think a lot of people that I've spoken to have a similar experience of, mm-hmm. you know, they're queer, and that doesn't necessarily mean that they were like 5 years old and they knew they liked all types of people or all genders or whatever. It was that they didn't know until they were exposed to it. And so that's something.
Like, oh, that's an option?
Yeah, right. And like, that's really powerful if you think about how many people would probably lead different lifestyles if they were just given the opportunity to explore something different than what they already know.
Or if they saw different representations of different ways to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I, like you, grew up in like very heteronormative spaces. Like, my mother has dinner on the table every mm-hmm. night at 6 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Like, very, very strict gender roles.
Yes.
And even the college I went to was very homophobic. And I personally did not have a great experience at my university. So there were not even opportunities for me to experiment in college. Mm. There were like two girls who were out in college, but there was almost this level of like, there's definitely this level of fetishization and tokenism. Yes. Like, oh, like the third floor RA is a lesbian, like, woo. Mm-hmm. And so actually when I moved to DC was when like, oh yeah, like definitely queer, definitely also interested mm-hmm. in women. Like, mm-hmm. 'cause the opportunity like you had never been there.
So sometimes, that's all people need is that little extra push. And then they realize, oh my God, I just unlocked a whole part of myself. I actually had, fun fact, I had a really great time going to the movies recently with a dear friend of mine, and she is also queer. And we went to go see The Incredibles, and we had this moment where we're sitting next to each other in the chair, and she leans over and she whispers to me and she goes, I think that Elastigirl was the first woman I ever had a crush on. Like, Elastigirl was the woman who made me realize I was queer. And I was oh my God, now that you say that, same. Like, this is the best moment we're having right now. And that's because Elastigirl is thick and amazing. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. Incredibles is a great movie. But that's an aside. But I say all of that to say, just being in a space where I was able to share moments like that with people allowed me to unlock things that I didn't even know about myself that I had already been kind of thinking and feeling in the past. Right. So I didn't come out. I just kind of existed. And slowly but surely, everyone in my life kind of, you know, figured me out. And I came home from my first winter break from my first year at Colorado College and was in the car with my dad, and my dad was like, how was your semester? And I was like, well, I had a lesbian dramatic saga in the middle of Breckenridge, so that's how this went. My dad was like, oh, you went skiing. I was like, oh, so that's the surprising thing to you, Dad? Not the fact that I told you I had a lesbian saga? Okay. But he was so great about it. My parents are amazing. And just making sure that they're as like culturally competent and being aware about these things as possible. And they awesome. Have just been so great. Just in my sexual education, like I think... If it weren't for them, I would not be as comfortable talking about sex and sexuality, because they were just so open and like talking about that kind of stuff.
And that makes such a huge difference.
Yeah.
Like, I grew up in an abstinence only Catholic culture and Lord. In a house where like, I don't think I've ever even heard either of my parents utter the word sex without it being immediately followed by or preceded by don't have
don't right? have sex
like, don't have sex right like and then like to the point where like they wouldn't ever like say if somebody like with the Monica Lewinsky scandal, for instance, like they couldn't even like utter the words to explain what was happening.
Wow.
Like, I never got a talk.
Yeah.
That's how like New England closed out the situation was. So you're really lucky.
Yeah, I very much am. And I talked to my mom on the phone actually yesterday, and she my younger sister just went off to college, and she applied to live in an LGBTQ dorm.
Oh, great.
And my mom was like, oh my God, Nia, I was in for a reality check. Like, I realized just how not progressive a lot of people are in my similar age group. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh yeah, I tell other people, like colleagues, friends, that your sister lives in an LGBTQ dorm. And they're like, oh, is that safe? They genuinely are concerned for my sister's like health and well-being living in an LGBTQ plus dorm.
Whoa.
When if you look at the facts, women are more likely to be assaulted in straight settings
100%
than they are in LGBTQ settings.
Yeah.
So my mom was like, I'm glad that your sister lives in an LGBTQ dorm. I don't have to necessarily worry as much about those types of things happening. That's not to say that sexual violence can't happen within the queer community, and that's like a whole other topic for a whole mm-hmm, other day. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was interesting hearing her experience talking to older folks that she thought were seemingly progressive
right.
on those topics. But yeah, I have great parents, so I'm lucky.
That's awesome. So how have you found having sex with women, starting to have sex with women after so many years of having sex with men?
Yeah,
Your sexual awakening.
My sexual awakening. I find that I honestly have more vanilla sex with women than I do with men.
Really?
Okay. And it's... it's partially, I think, due to me growing up so deeply entrenched in the gender binary. And so when gender is constructed in a way that women relate to men in a certain way and women relate to other women in a certain way, like I almost categorize those relationships in those two boxes. And so with women, I'm a lot more tender. And with men, it's a lot easier for me to sort of detach myself. And just be like, we're fucking, this is like BDSM style. So I'll do a lot more like kind of violent or aggressive play with men than I will with women, mm-hmm. because with women, it's almost as if I'm sort of seeking a safe haven from the nonsense that is heterosexual dating sometimes. I find it hard to then go into that space where we can feel okay getting into more aggressive types of sexual play. And that's like my own personal things that I sort of need to shed about the gender binary itself and just through my process of being able to date more and more women,
right.
and my process of dating more and more men that actually make me feel empowered and good, I think I will be able to slowly disintegrate that binary and move towards a more equitable, almost understanding of my relationships with both men and women.
Right, and to play with those power dynamics in a much more fluid way.
Yeah, and so I feel like I'm a lot more comfortable playing with power dynamics when I have sex with men than I do when I'm with women. And that's almost a personal guilt of me being like, I respect this woman so much, like women to women power, sisterhood. And that goes back to my point about, you know, feeling almost uncomfortable seeing black women as sexual partners is because I've for so long seen them as sisters. So in general with women, not just black women, I kind of have that little thing in the back of my mind saying like, you can't disrespect her, like she's amazing. But realizing that I can separate that sexual play from the way that I treat her, like in her everyday life, you know, those things don't have to necessarily intertwine.
Totally. And I think it's really healthy that you're acknowledging that you're thinking on all these things and your identity itself is constantly evolving.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there's not a destination on any of this stuff.
No.
You know, like if you had asked me even 2 years ago if I was queer, I would have said no. We all are figuring things out and what we want changes, and that's totally healthy.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, talk to my friends a smooth 2 years ago. I was like, guys, I can never date a woman. I can only have sex with women. That's it. I'm romantically attracted to men and only sexually attracted to women. And then I ended up dating a woman like a smooth 4 months later. And then I'll be like, men are trash. I hate them so much. And now I'm fully, you know, engaged with a man now. So things are always changing and they're never set in stone. And I think with sexuality and part of understanding queerness is just being super okay with change.
Yeah.
And that's a concept that's really familiar to me now that before, just in my everyday life, change was harder for me to face. But because I've stepped into my queerness a lot more, like change on the whole has been a lot easier for me.
That's totally fair. And, you know, even if you don't identify as being queer, change is constant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you should hope to not be the same person 2 years from now as you are today. You know, constantly evolving the way you're thinking mm-hmm. about yourself and your place in the world.
Yeah.
So what advice would you give to women who are interested in exploring with other women for the first time?
So I would say advice to everyone, but in particular folks who want to explore queerness more. Sex is not goal oriented. It is it doesn't have to be oriented towards anything but your own pleasure. And that's
say it so they can hear it in the back.
I know. Say it one more time. I have really come to be very familiar with that concept, both in my work as a sexual assault prevention educator, and sexual educator, in general, but sex does not have to be like point A to point B. So many of us are taught growing up in the heterosexual and very patriarchal way of having sex that is centered around the man, that we have to go from like, you know, did you get from second base to fourth base? Like that whole baseball analogy of like, oh, bro, did you get to second base? And if you think about how that analogy still is centered around like the man as the agent in that situation, right? Like second base means he touched her boobs. Third base means like she sucked his dick, right? So thinking about the ways that we can shed that linearity and that goal orientation from making someone orgasm to just making someone feel good. And so I've had sexual intimacy with people where I don't orgasm at all, but they gave me a really great massage, and I felt so much pleasure from that massage, and like they were able to orgasm and they had a great time, right? Like, so it's not a lose situation if someone comes and someone doesn't. It's all about setting those like orientations around what you want out of the experience. Right. So for example, this is a conversation that I usually have with the men in my life, actually more so than the women, because the sex between two women in my experience has been so much easier to move through as a non-goal-oriented practice, mm-hmm. because there's no phallus involved. And so there isn't really this thing that we're orbiting the sexual encounter around, right? You know, we can go from oral sex to you know, doing things with more power dynamic play if we want, using our hands, using our mouths, but there isn't like an end point in quote unquote lesbian sex, which I love. And so I kind of import that mentality into my sexual relationships with men, in which I'm like, this is how we're queering sex right now. Like, yes, we are still in a quote unquote straight sexual encounter, mm-hmm. but we can so totally absolutely queer this sexual relationship by not focusing on your penis and focusing on our pleasure. And if your penis incorporates pleasure, that's wonderful, but it does not only have to be about that, and we don't have to end with you orgasming and me being sad at the end.
Right. And as soon as you're able to do that, to focus on pleasure instead of like the orgasm goal, mm-hmm. you take a lot of pressure off of everybody, because you know, our culture says that guys have to stay rock hard and be mm-hmm. able to fuck for an hour mm-hmm. straight. Like, that's a lot of pressure for guys, and also like physiologically very challenging and like not particularly pleasurable for either parties. And, you know, and so as soon as you are like removing the idea that you have to perform in a certain way and just say, okay, like, let's communicate about what feels good and let's do those things and explore and be playful in a way that's consensual and fun.
Yeah. And so I think too, like, the concept of queering sex extends to preventing harmful behavior, right? Like you said, communicating about things beforehand is required if you want to have sex that isn't goal-oriented. Like, goal-oriented mm-hmm. sex has all these implicit expectations of how things will go.
Right.
And so people sort of move through what they perceive might be the sexual process that is expected of them.
Right.
And there's no communication about whether or not I actually want to give you head. There's no communication about whether or not I actually want to have intercourse, right? And then at the end, both people are sitting there like, oh, did we really just do that? Yeah, okay. Is that really the type of shitty sex we just had?
Right.
And so doing a pleasure-based sex is just more playful, in my opinion, a lot more communicative, prevents so much mishap from happening, as well as like maximizing everyone's fun time.
Totally. And if you can't talk about it, you shouldn't be doing it.
That is my other point. Yes. Like, that, to anyone, like, if you don't feel comfortable expressing and voicing your needs in a sexual encounter with someone, you should not be having sex with them. Because either they don't respect you enough to listen to what you have to say, or you're in a situation where you don't respect yourself enough to feel as though you can speak up.
Right.
And so making sure you can step back from that situation and assess, like, okay, maybe this isn't for me.
Right. Well, and you stop feeling like you're on an escalator of sex. We're like, okay, well, like, we made out hot and heavy, and now as a female, like, and this is definitely something that I feel deeply ingrained and like logically acknowledge, but really have trouble like uncoupling from the idea that like, well, you started this, you have to finish it.
Yeah.
You owe me something. Like, oh, you're just going to leave me hanging here with blue balls. Mm-hmm. Like, and guys say that kind of stuff regularly. Mm-hmm.
And I recently had an encounter where I was able to feel empowered enough to like stop in the middle of sex, which was amazing.
Yes.
Like, I've never done that before, and I felt really great about it. And so that was
high-fiving you across the table.
That was a
great
personal
work.
Milestone for me. So yes.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today, Nia, and sharing your perspective and story with us. I'm sure we're going to have you on again.
Yeah.
And everybody listening should look forward to, you know, knowing that Nia is informing the process behind the scenes and helping with research and getting guests.
Yes.
So if you have questions for either of us, suggestions for a guest or anything, you can email us at insertherepodcast@gmail.com. Okay. If you enjoy the show, you can write us a little review on iTunes or wherever else you listen to your favorite podcasts. You've been listening to Insert Here. Stay horny.